WCCW.
Extreme Canadian Championship Wrestling. Now on Turnbuckle Time. Keeping you up to date on all the turns, pushes, and storylines.
Hey now, it's Turnbuckle Time! Just about a week after Circle of Fear in Surrey and the return to Abbotsford Part 2 coming up this weekend. Return to Poco, it's their first return since, I think 2007 if I'm not mistaken, for an actual event. They were there in 2009 for Wrestling for Hunger. Joining me on the line, as usual, is Shane Lochran. How are you doing, Shano?
I'm doing pretty good, Corey. I'm pretty exhausted. Just spent about a week on a houseboat on the Shuswap, so... You know, a lot of late nights, a lot of partying, but you know what? I always have time for you and Turnbuckle Time, so you know I'll fight through it.
Well, I did manage to get out to the Surrey show that was on the Friday last Friday, but I didn't manage to get out to Abbotsford. Me and you were talking last show about how much we enjoyed Abbotsford because it's a little bit of almost like an ECCW parallel dimension. It's like bizarro ECCW.
Yeah, and all the typical storylines don't really apply. Faces are heels, heels are faces, so I think it makes it a little bit more unpredictable. You know, when there's a certain storyline, sometimes you know, okay, this is going to happen, but you can kind of throw that all out the window when they go out to Abbotsford, and it sounds like it was a kind of an unpredictable show out there.
We'll touch on that a little bit later. First, we're going to touch on the Surrey Circle of Fear. Lots of match changes on this one. It's a good thing they have that little asterisk on the poster that says subject to change on the card because, boy howdy, we had quite a bit of change. And all because one man decided not to show up, Shane. Artemis Spencer not able to make it out for the NWA Junior Canadian Heavyweight Championship triple threat with Azul Angel and Alex Plexus. And as a result, we have a scramble of matches.
So that doesn't seem like Artie to pull the no-show. And that match, that triple threat match with Artie, Azul, and Plexus, that I think in the last Turnbuckle Time, I was really putting that one over, thought all three of those guys would contrast each other nicely. And unfortunate that one's not going to happen. Maybe they can reschedule it and have it sometime in the future. So what's going on with Artemis Spencer not showing up? Maybe we're putting him over a little bit too much on Turnbuckle Time. Maybe... He's starting to get a little bit of an ego.
It's gone to his head.
No-show these events.
I don't know. This is first time I can recall Artie no-showing. So let's not hate on old Artemis just yet. But as a result of his no-showing, like we said, a scramble of matches happened. Some very random. One that happened as a result, Plexus. We mentioned him. He was supposed to be in that three-way. Instead, he opens up the show against Pete Powers. This one, not going in Plexus's favor. Fairly quick match between him and Powers. As you can expect, Powers, the big bully, the big power moves. He gets the giant victory over Alex Plexus, but not before Tony Baroni can run out and develop that storyline a little bit further. I know me and you, Shane, are pretty stoked on that one. We were calling for it for a while, and we got our wish. Baroni comes out and literally hangs Pete Powers over the rope with a bull rope and challenges him to, you guessed it, a bull rope match. What do you think about that, Shane?
Well, at first, what exactly is a bull rope match? Are we going to have these guys tied together in a match? Kind of like those, what was that match with Savio Vega, Steve Austin way back in the day? Leather strap match? Is it going to be something like that?
I think it's going to be something like that. Almost like, yes, like a strap match or a touch all four corners match or something like that. Which will be interesting because I've never seen one of those live and I've never even seen one of them professionally. So it'll be interesting to see how these guys pull it off.
Yeah, I think it's cool to kind of have a gimmick match to put this feud over a little bit. Pete Powers looks like he's getting the push that he deserves. And I think a main event with the stipulation really gets a big spotlight on Pete Powers, shows that he can handle the main event status and see what he does in an unorthodox match. Most matches we see from Pete Powers, pretty straightforward, pretty powerful, a lot of power slams, a lot of throws. You know, throw a bull rope in there, see if he can be creative and see if he can handle Tony Baroni.
One really funny part about that match, you can go on ECCW.com and check it out. They got a link there. I've tweeted it. I think it's on my Facebook. We'll tweet it again.
Tweet it from Turnbuckle Time.
Yeah, so it'll be tweeted, Shane. Don't worry. Tony Barone on his way into the ring to make his surprise sneak attack on Pete Powers there with the bull rope. He climbed to the top rope and launched a missile dropkick at Pete Powers, but not before an overzealous... On the website, it says overzealous security guard. It didn't look like a security guard to me because he was wearing a Canucks hat and some garb. Anyways,
this looked like a huge nerd.
He did look like a nerd. He was man-loving Tony Barone as Tony's, like, climbing up to the top rope. He's tugging on his shorts, tugging on his shirt, and Tony turns around and gives him a stiff boot in the mouth. And this guy's, like, adjusting his glasses, and it just... At first, I thought it was going to be pretty brutal, but then I was laughing for, like, a good couple of minutes afterwards. That was a pretty solid boot to the chops.
Yeah, the guy, he didn't look hurt. The nerd kind of just looked more shocked and surprised than anything else. So, you know, I'm sure he went home, played World of Warcraft for 5 hours and went to bed. He looked like he was fine. It was just looked like it was all in good fun.
Yeah, all in good fun. He won't be touching any ECCW superstars in the near future.
But yeah, I don't think that's a security guard. We've been to almost every event. I've never seen this guy before. I just don't think they want the bad publicity of ECCW superstar punch fan in the face. But I guess we kind of screwed them over here by outing that as a fan. But whatever. Nobody listens to this.
Yeah. Exactly. Another one that came as a result of already no-showing. Cremator was originally supposed to fight Jamie Diaz. In this case, he'll fight Hellion. What do you know about this Hellion guy, Shane?
I know absolutely nothing about this Hellion guy.
It's Apollo Deen.
It's Apollo Deen?
Yeah, it's Apollo Deen.
You mean Kalos?
Sorry, Kalos, yeah. Was it Kalos? So, yeah.
So what's different between Apollo Deen and Hellion? Is he fiercer? Is he meaner? He's got a better ring entrance. What's different about Hellion?
The name on his driver's license. It's Hellion
it.
Now.
Just the name.
More or
Does
less.
Does he have a druid? Does he have a sidekick? Does he have devil horns? He's got to have something. They can't just change his name and do nothing with it.
Anyways, to the match. Cremator makes short work of Hellion. And this is where the development comes in. We're just thinking, okay, well, Hellion's been brought out to fill Jamie Diaz's spot in this match, but Cremator puts him down, and then they chuck him in a body bag, and we're talking about Deeds, the druid, Rigger von Slasher, the German druid, and Cremator chucked him in a body bag and hauled him off. And interesting development, where me and you have been tossing around the idea that he could perhaps be that druid, but I guess not.
Well, maybe now that it's Hellion, maybe Apollo Deen is the druid, and maybe there's two guys, there's Apollo Deen and there's Hellion. No, that doesn't make much sense.
I think that's wishful thinking. I don't think they have twins. He's not that good.
So Hellion gets put in the body bag, they haul him out, the druid's there. Where do you see this going?
Well, I think we're going to find out in the near future. Obviously, almost like a Ministry of Darkness-esque angle where they kind of come out and they abduct you and then they make you drink the Kool-Aid or something like that and you come back evil or something like that. I think that's kind of where they're headed, but definitely putting doubt into our minds as to whether or not Kalos, Apollo Deen, or Hellion are in that druid suit. So that's why I kind of like the development there, even though it was kind of a short match. At least they're doing something with that. I thought they were just going to have the druid hanging around and not do anything with them. So kudos on the development there, I say.
So was the druid, was he the man in charge of this whole abduction? Because maybe that's where they're going to go with this thing. The cremator and Deeds beat you up, and then the druid comes in, he abducts you, and he switches you over. Maybe he has some sort of power over these guys.
Maybe. We'll have to see. They touched on the Abbotsford show, and we'll talk about that later. Hellion, we did hear more from him, as well as cremator and the druid, so we'll touch on that when Abbotsford rolls around. But the next match on the card, Casey Spinelli taking on Taya Valkyrie and Veronica Vice in a triple threat match, which we can only assume is for a shot at Nicole Matthews and the Supergirl Championship. Me and you had never seen Taya Valkyrie in action, not even via DVD. I checked out some videos on YouTube, but you need to get a real feel in the league that you watch, if that makes sense. I needed to see her in ECCW against ECCW girls to really kind of gauge what she's all about. We do, however, remember her attire, do we not, Shane? She has some very interesting attire. She comes out in, like, some leopard print tight stuff, two-piece, with gold trim and then albino white furry boots. And she comes out to Sexy Bitch by Akon. And it's, I can't really put my finger on her gimmick. It's like I'm a jungle woman, but I'm here to dance and club. I don't know what it is.
Is she American? Maybe she thought she's coming up to a wrestling promotion in Canada. It's going to be cold. You know, I got to pack my furry boots. And then when she showed up, she's like, oh, wait a minute. It's actually not that cold, but I fucking only brought the one pair of boots. Maybe that's what happened there.
I think she's from Canada.
Oh, well, then throw that out the window.
I don't know. She got some interesting gear, nonetheless. This match, a very scrambly match, as sometimes triple threats tend to be. Spinelli in the end gets the win with the sunset flip over Taya Valkyrie. Here's where things get interesting. Me and you have been tossing around this whole Nicole Ray Brooks. What are they doing? Where are they going with this? Blah 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 blah. We find out here. Nicole comes in to attack KC. Ray getting in the way. You know Ray, lovable but clumsy, gets in the way. Nicole gives him a swift kick in the knackers, probably well deserved at this point, and Ray Brooks, he gets bailed out by the 50-50 girl. Is this where you saw this one ending, and what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. This is not how I saw it ending. I think maybe this is how you saw it ending, because I remember on the last turnbuckle time, Corey said something about Ray Brooks had his eye on the 50-50 girl, so maybe a little foreshadowing there by Basso. But I really didn't know where this one was going to go. I thought maybe they would drag it out a little bit further, maybe push Ray Brooks, have him get a few wins, run that whole Nicole is jealous of Ray Brooks' newfound success. But I think if they did that program, it would have had to go a few weeks, and I think maybe they didn't want to give it enough time. They didn't want to give it all that time. They've been trying to do a program here with Ray Brooks and Nicole for a while. Wasn't going anywhere, so I think they just said, you know what, let's get rid of it. Let's break them up and see where else we can take Ray Brooks. So kind of disappointed that angle never really went anywhere, but now we'll see what happens with this mysterious 50-50 girl.
I really think they could have done something better. Really, I do. Like, they could have done anything. They could have had Nicole beat him up in a hardcore street fight. Could have had anything. Next match. I'm upset here, Shane. I'm actually welling up here a bit.
Do you need a moment to compose yourself?
Yes, I do need a moment. Okay, I'm good.
All right.
The next one, not advertised on the card. Sometimes UCCW does that. They give you a little hidden gem, a little freebie. Dropkick Murphy and Scotty Mack taking on Jordy Taylor and the aforementioned Southern Comfort, Ray Brooks, who obviously isn't that distraught that he couldn't come out and fight in his tag team match with his partner, Jordy Taylor. What I found most interesting about this match is when Dropkick Murphy and Scotty Mack come to the ring, announcer Pat McClory, who we don't have a problem with, we love him, he announces them as the founders of Chilltown. Ooh, I thought that dated them horribly. when was the last time Chilltown was relevant?
Yeah, because we've been doing this thing for well over a year now, and I don't think we weren't around when Chilltown was around, so that's got to be dated at least a year and a half, 2 years. And I'm sure that ECCW has picked up a lot of new fans, so I don't really see why he would announce that. It must be some sort of inside joke. Must have been an anniversary or a dare or something. You know, just
a dare is
having
like
a little fun.
Well,
did he announce the other team as Team Dangerfield?
No,
because that's what I gave them that moniker last week, because they get no respect. They just get walked all over. So just Jordy Taylor and Ray Brooks, my Dangerfield didn't make it.
No, they didn't make it, dude. But I just thought it was funny, the whole Chilltown thing, because even when Chilltown was good, I can't imagine Dropkick Murphy being much better than he is now. Something. I don't know. Of course they get the victory here. Team Dangerfield not going over. It's a damn crock. It's a fix. Me and you both know it, Shane. And it has something to do with that Sweetster guy. And he was wearing a new coat. It was a red coat with yellow trim. And he looked like a circus leader from Barnum & Bailey.
A red coat with what kind of trim?
Gold. He looked like the ringleader at the circus.
I'm pretty sure I saw that at Value Village there on East Hastings last time I was in there.
He looked like one of those guys who has the monkey sitting on his shoulder and he cranks the box. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Like one of those gypsy guys? He looks like one of them.
Like a gypsy slash carny.
Yes. More or less. Scotty Mack hits a midair super kick on Jordy. Jordy's flying off the turnbuckle, and Scotty hits him with the super kick and the chops. despite Dropkick's presence and Sweetster's fashion statement, not a bad match. And I think Jordy Taylor's really coming along, despite all the Dangerfield bit we're throwing on these guys. They're coming along, Shane. They're coming along.
He's still coming along, but I think he's still looking for that elusive first victory in ECCW. I don't think we've ever seen him have his hand raised in ECCW yet, but the first victory probably always is the hardest. And you know what? Maybe give him a few losses, and then when he finally does get a victory, have him upset one of the big guys. And you know, I think that'd be a good push for Jordy Taylor.
Possible feud with Hellion in the future. Who knows? Stallion Smith and the return of Sid Salem, which you thought was underpromoted, that they should have done something with it in the Pat Cup. They didn't.
I also said that I thought there was no way in hell that Sid Salem would lose this match, that it would be a squash, that they're going to establish Sid Salem as he's back, he means business, and the natural selection better watch out. Thought maybe he would go, maybe run the gauntlet and take out every member of the natural selection one by one. Did he start it off with Stallion Smith?
It looked like that was definitely his intention. Sid, talking to him after the show, I always catch up with Sid. He's one of my favorite guys to talk to. He said it felt a bit weird coming out as a face. I watched the tape over and over, his entrance 1,000 times, just to see what, like, kind of the reaction on his face. Did he do anything different? You know what? He didn't look out of place. He got the pop. He didn't look out of place, but he told me after the show, he said it felt really weird. It didn't feel nice to be shaking hands and stuff. He still got that heel stuck in him.
And also, so many times in the past, he would come out with his man, the Natch would be there every single match. You know, and I think if there's something comforting about having somebody in your corner in case the shit goes down, you know, he's there to get your back, or he's there to take the heat off of you and, you know, interact with the crowd. So maybe Sid still got to get comfortable with the face thing, still got to get comfortable with, you know, being by himself.
This match didn't last very long. I thought they would probably give Sid at least 8 to 10 minutes for his comeback match, but no such luck. Probably the match lasts, I'm going to say, in between 3 to 5 minutes. Some pretty textbook stuff. Eventually, the natural selection comes out at the behest of the Natch and orders his boys out to surround the ring. Asylum, he's got a chair in hand. He's ready to throw down the middle of the ring as the selection surrounds the ring. Jason Sullivan's music hit. He bails him out, and then they get right into Bishop and Sully, which seems to be a trend in the shows as of late. A clash of titans, a match between the big boys, and this one was no different, and actually not a bad tilt between Bishop and Jason Sullivan.
So just to clear up that last match, natural selection comes in, and is there disqualification, interference? Do we even get a winner in that match?
No, sorry, should have mentioned that. Bell rings, we got a no contest, which, obviously, nothing resolved there, but obviously you can see the selection is looking to get Sid. And I caught up with the natural selection a little bit after this one to find out their intentions. Here's what they had to say. It was Bishop, it was Stallion, who we've never had on the show before, and of course, the Natch.
One thing's for sure, we're going to show Shilam just how the selection's going to be. This is the new breed.
Now, Sid Salem obviously coming back on a big uprisal, obviously has the fans on his back. Does that bother the selection? Sid used to be a marked man, so to speak, a definite heel in the ECCW, and all of a sudden he's face. We've got the big man, we've got Bishop, we've got Pete Powers, and you, a Stallion. Is this big fan backing of Salem going to affect the natural selection in any way?
Slapping their hands won't help you. Hoot and holler won't do you any good. When you're in the ring, it's just your opponent, not the fans.
Now, we've also got the big man, Bishop, here. He's recently returned to action after a lengthy absence due to injury, back from TLC. Bishop, what do you have planned for Sid? You're the big man in the national selection. Were you looking to take over Sid's spot, becoming the big man there?
I didn't have to take over Sid's spot. I was thrust into Sid's spot because he couldn't handle his position and had to cower away. All right, let's get one thing straight. He can slap hands with the fans all he wants, get cheers. He's dealing with natural selection. He brought this upon himself. He came back, interrupted our own celebration, decided that he was going to attack Azeem from behind and go after natural. Now, let's get one thing straight. We're dealing with natural selection here. Listen to the name, natural selection. Look at the guys down the line. We've got Stallion Smith. Look at the man. He's chiseled. He's carved out a rock. All right? We've got Azeem, the motherfucking dream. All right? Look at that man. Have you seen the size that that man's put on? Have you seen how he's progressed in the ring? You've got Pete Powers, who's a monster. Just amazing man. All right? And then there's me. Former NWA Canadian Heavyweight Champion, multiple time tag team champion, ECW champion, hardcore champion. I've done it all. All right, I can do whatever I want. If I feel like going and getting the Supergirl's belt tomorrow, I'm going to go get the Supergirl's belt. And we're followed, we're led by the man, the myth, the legend himself, the manager of champions. The man who chose us all to be part of this faction, all right? We are naturally selected for greatness, and Sid Salem didn't cut the mustard, as they say.
Now, one man who just joined us off mic here, you didn't see him, but Bish definitely made a mention to him. We're talking to the natural. Your plans for Sid Salem, heard we've heard your, so to speak, minions. I don't know if you want to call them that, but we've heard them talk on the matter. What do you have in plan, Natch? As the leader and the former mentor of Sid Salem, what do you have in plan for the man?
My plan is not to tell you shit, Basso. That's my plan. You little snitch. You're going to go tell your buddy Salem so you go on? I'm not going to tell you anything. Sid Salem, whatever you want, you're not going to get.
You brought this upon yourself, boy.
This is natural selection. It is survival of the fittest.
That pretty much wraps it up there. They're walking back inside. I'm not getting any more out of these guys. You heard it from the natural selection. Big plans for Sid. We're just going to have to wait to see what happens in the next couple events.
As you can see, those guys are definitely, definitely fired up, and they want Sid Salem. They made their intentions perfectly clear when they surrounded the ring. And are you liking where this angle is going, Shane? You've been predicting the gauntlet. Do you think this is going to happen, or do you think it's what I think is going to happen, and it's going to be one of those things where Sid keeps on getting frustrated by the selection?
I think the gauntlet idea that I have, I think, is out the window. If they were going to go with that, they would have had Smith get squashed. Now, I think, you know, it looks like it's going to be Salem versus the natural selection. And, you know, Salem, big dude, tough guy, but he can't take them on by himself. So I think maybe as the weeks go on, you're going to see, you know, a few guys aligning themselves with Sid Salem. Maybe you'll see Jason Sullivan join the fight. And maybe it'll be a different guy every week, somebody who's been burned in the past by the natural selection. So I think you'll see kind of a ragtag group of guys kind of join Sid Salem and try to take out the natural selection.
That'll be interesting. And it's the seeds have been planted. The feud's already underway. And I think it's just a matter of Sid feeling comfortable and getting used to being a face. That must be weird. He was a heel for 5 years. So the next match, this one, again, shame on you, Artemis Spencer. This match is a result of you not showing up. Azul Angel taking on Jamie Diaz. But you know what? Bless you, Artemis Spencer, because this one I actually really enjoyed. One I like to call a hidden gem. It was a doozy. Azul Angel, me and you are starting to get more and more on his bandwagon, so to speak. Jamie Diaz, we both love. I think he's obviously one of the mainstays in the mid-card division, let's say, of the ECCW. He's on every card. He's at every show. He's always helping out. He's putting in the work. He's looking better physical-wise. He's getting new gear. He's really playing the part. Also had some new t-shirts out coming out soon. I think they'll be at the Poco show. We'll talk more about that later. So it was good to see these two guys, and they had a good tilt, a good mixture of high spots, some good technical wrestling. In the end, Jamie Diaz winning with the scissor kick off the second rope as Azul Angel was in the crouch position. Gets the 1-2-3. They embrace afterwards, and like I said, not a bad match.
Jamie Diaz seems to be, you know, lying a little bit low since we saw Chuck Austin-Sauce have a leave of absence from ECCW. Just kind of been in these odd matches here and there, no main events, no storylines. But I think he's putting in the work, and I think he's getting ready for a coming out party. He's got that big match against Scotty Mack coming up at Return to Poco. So I think after that, I think we'll probably see Jamie Diaz maybe even in the main event mix, maybe for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. But I think coming up in Port Coquitlam, that'll be his coming out party.
We'll have to see. Me and you have been trying to push Diaz for a while here, so it'd be nice to see him take that next step. The main event, one that I really wanted to see it because I wanted to see if they can improve on what they did last time, but part of me was afraid they wouldn't, and I didn't really want to see a repeat of last time. I'm talking about Ravenous Randy and Moondog Manson. The last time they met at the Bridgeview Hall, it was a rather slow encounter, kind of after the fast-paced event that we had already seen. They kind of slowed it down with what I like to call a shot-for-shot with a Singapore cane. But this time, while the weapons and them hitting over each other over the head with shit isn't going to change, they managed to inject some hilarity and some humor in there. Ravenous Randy coming out in, it looked like a lumberjack outfit. He had like a big thick Carhartt coat on. He had a big lumberjack sweater on. He had a big helmet with a visor. He had these big hockey gloves. He looked like he was ready to deal with some barbed wire. And then across the ring, you have Manson. He's wearing like a shredded t-shirt, shredded jeans. And Ravenous was just terrified to get in the ring. He did everything in kind of in a weary slow motion in his celebrations. It was pretty funny. As expected, in the end, I think this is only justice to Moondog. Moondog does get the victory with a powerbomb through two steel folding chairs, which look nasty. Both these guys gushing blood, needless to say. Nice to see Moondog regain the championship. I did think they improved on what they did last month in Surrey. And the thing that worked for me was that it was almost like a hardcore game of one-upsmanship. They seemed to be buddies who were willing to kick the crap out of each other for a hunk of metal. It was good.
Yeah, and I like where they went with the more humorous angle with Ravenous Randy, because from the start I knew he's not a hardcore champion, to be honest with you. I don't think that's a good fit for him. It hinders his future matches. There's not a lot of competitors that can fight in the hardcore division. And I think it was just a matter of time before Moondog Manson took the belt. It just, something feels wrong when the hardcore belt isn't on Moondog Manson. So I like where they went with the humorous angle here. The barbed wire, did that come into play big in this match? Because it was the circle of fear.
It certainly was a circle of fear. Well, me and you thought they were going to have like barbed wire wrapped around the ropes in almost like a vine fashion. What they actually had was that every corner, the turnbuckles, had a board with barbed wire propped up into it. So these guys were whipping each other into the corners. Of course, Moondog brought his Barbie bat out and was grinding Ravenous's head. And actually, we'll get to hear the audio here just in a second, but they bled all over me in the post-match interview.
They bled all over you?
All over my hands, all over my mic. They just missed my shoes, which I would have been pissed about.
You could have said something. You said, hey, Moondog, you're bleeding all over my expensive audio equipment here.
To be fair...
Stand up for yourself, Corey. Come on.
To be fair, I think it was mostly Ravenous. I think Moondog had dried up at that point, but Ravenous was... he was still gushing, and they were side by side as they did this interview. Let's just go to it now, so I can fire that off. These guys definitely still friends, even though kicking the crap out of each other. Here it is.
Oh, wrestling's all fake, anyways. I go out there night after night, and the thing is, I don't cut fucking interviews like this, shooting like fuck. I don't all shoot right. I've been doing this shit for about 14 years now, and I don't go out there to do, sports entertainment. I go out there and kick the shit out of the guy I'm wrestling, and I go out there to get my head kicked in. That's what the fans want to see. They want to see fucking blood and guts wrestling. Old school stuff, Guys going out there getting their heads cut off. That's what I do. It feels great to have that title on my shoulder, but that title doesn't mean shit all. I go out there every night, and I'm like a champion every night I leave that ring. It doesn't matter if I have the belt in my bag or not. I've had that belt for so long. It's like an old pair of underwear, with holes. Like, I probably should have thrown it out a long time ago, but they feel so comfy.
Ravenous, you're known in many people's eyes, a great wrestler, a fantastic technical wrestler, but you can also be a little bit light, a little bit comedic sometimes. How does it feel to step in the ring with your mate Moondog and get really serious with some hardcore wrestling?
Well, I've been wrestling for 10 long years, and you know what? I know what these fans want to see, and they want to see sports entertainment. They don't want to see any of that head cutting off, all that blood, all that barbed wire. That's not what the fans pay to see. The fans want to see me strut. They want to see me sing. They want to see me shake my groove thing all over the Bridgeview Hall. But tonight, I went one-on-one. That's my cell phone ringing, the popularity of the Ravenous one. But tonight, I went one-on-one with Moondog Manson. And I thought I could bring my sports entertainment, and clearly that didn't stand up to the game plan that Moondog Manson had in mind. He planned on cutting my head off. He planned on recircumcising me. He planned on giving me an enema with barbed wire. Well, luckily enough, I stopped him short of the enema and took a powerbomb onto two chairs, And you know what? I'm happy that the title is wrapped around Moondog Manson's waist, because he deserves it, because he's hardcore 24-7. And me, I'm hardcore maybe like 21-6, maybe 21 hours, 6 days a week.
But he's going to be hardcore all night long, baby.
Well,
one thing I definitely want to touch on, guys, not often you see two guys who have just beat the living shit.
Blood on your microphone now, eh?
Part of wrestling. One thing I really wanted to touch on is, you know, you see guys, they go in, they beat the shit out of each other, but it's not often these you see you guys side by side cutting a promo together. Talk about the camaraderie, that hardcore gamesmanship you guys have between you.
We're homoerotic. That's all it is. We're just going to go to a hotel room now and get nasty with each other.
Well, I didn't think that was what we were going to do at all, Moondog. I thought we were going to go back to BP's and maybe have a Jack and Coke.
I'm sorry. I thought we worked for Vince McMahon.
No comment.
We'll leave it at that. The new hardcore champion, Moondog Manson, and of course his close friend now and challenger.
Best friends.
Are these guys lovable or what? You're totally right. They did the right thing with making a little bit of a humorous hardcore angle because, like you said, that's ravenous his gig. He's a talented technical wrestler, but also a little bit of a lighter character. And same with Moondog. Not technical, I mean, but a little bit of a lighter character. So it was good that they managed to splice both styles of Moondog's hardcore and the comedy of Ravenous. And I thought they definitely improved on what they did in Surrey the month before.
So Moondog is a lighter character now, you think? The guy who shows up at the event drinking Crown Royal in the crowd, the guy who's smashing people with barbed wire every event, that's a lighter character?
I find it humorous, yes.
You find that humorous?
Well,
you're
what I mean is...
a sadistic person, Corvette.
You haven't been to the last few shows. The guy cuts funny promos. And even what you just heard there in the audio, he's a funny guy. I like Moondog.
Yeah, he's intimidating. I don't think he's a funny guy. I find nothing funny about Moondog.
That's where me and you differ.
We disagree.
There you go. Our usual post-recap ratings... Tops. What was your top for this event?
For this card, I couldn't get to see the matches, but just from going through this with you, I like that Pete Powers and Tony Baroni are continuing their feud together. I like the idea of a bull rope match, something different, something to get the fans talking about it, and I think it's a great way to put Pete Powers over. So I like the continuous push of Pete Powers against Baroni.
Fair enough.
That's my top for the event.
My top... We'll go with, just because obviously you could see my enthusiasm when talking about it, the Moondog Ravenous match. This wasn't stellar work. This isn't going to go down in the annals of time as the best hardcore match ever. But they definitely improved on what they did last month in Surrey, and I thought it was a worthy main event, and blood well spent for those two gentlemen, let's just say. What is your flop?
My flop, I'm going to go with the no-show of Artemis Spencer. Last time on Turnbuckle Time, I was really talking up the three-way match. I thought Artie, Azul, and Plexus, I think they'll have similar styles. I think they would complement each other very well. There'd be a lot of over-the-top rope dives to the outside. I think it would be an interactive match with the fans. And I think it's a flop not having that match on the card. So, again, hopefully they reschedule that match for a future date. So that's my flop, the no-show of Artemis Spencer, resulting in the cancellation of the three-way match.
We're jumping all over Artie for this one. If he listens to this, he's going to hate our guts. He's gonna be like, I'm just, you're on me.
I wanted to see him wrestle, and he wasn't there to wrestle, and I'm disappointed. I don't think that's being rude. I think that's the greatest compliment you can have.
Gotcha. Well, you're kind of right, but at the same time, we are being like, you ruined it, Artie. It's all your fault.
Yeah, we don't know what happened. There could have been a family emergency, could have been a Charles in Charge marathon on or something. you never know what the circumstances were, so.
Little known fact, ECCW wrestlers love Charles in Charge. They do.
Is this true?
They love it. It's their favorite out-of-ring programming, I believe. Just talking to a few of the people anyways. I know Sid loves it. My flop was...
That's just a weird coincidence. I did not know that, so that's strange. Out of all the shows, I threw that one out there.
Mm-hmm. My flop is Nicole and Ray. I was going to name it my top for being over, but I'm going to name it my flop just because I thought they could have done something, anything with that. I mean, it took them long enough, and that's what they did with it. Like, could have, me and you were just tossing around ideas off the top of our heads, and just the ones off the top of our heads might have been a bit better. I mean, it's not something they didn't need to take 6 weeks to blow this thing out. They could have just done it easy, quick and easy, but I just didn't. I feel all warm and mushy inside. I didn't like the way they executed it.
Well, it wasn't going anywhere, and now your girl, Nicole Matthews, I know you're a big fan of hers. Maybe this frees her up to do something, you know, back in the women's division. She did the thing in the PAC Cup against the men. You know, I think they just need to concentrate now on having her develop some feuds in the women's division, get rid of Ray Brooks, get rid of the feuds with the boys, and strengthen that women's division now that they're minus one. I think that division needs to be strengthened, and we need Nicole Matthews to concentrate on that, and I think that's probably where they're going with it.
What's your rating? Out of 10. Out of 10 stars, what's your rating?
Out of 10 stars for Surrey Circle of Fear. I feel a little bit burned on this one because a lot of my predictions were false. The Sid Sylum match, my predictions were false. Predictions for the Nicole Matthews things were false. And besides the Beat Powers and Baroni feud getting pushed forward, not a lot of revelations, not a lot of storylines being moved forward in this one. So I'm just only going to give it 5 out of 10.
5? That's 50%. That's just a pass.
Well, it's just a pass. I didn't see any of the matches. I'm sure they were great. Jamie Diaz and Azul Angel sounded like it was a fantastic match. Same with the main event. But just from looking at the booking of the card, just from the booking alone, I got to give it 5 out of 10.
Go ahead and say it. Artie is the reason you're rating this 5 out of 10. Say it.
No, not necessarily. I don't think so. No. Artie, that's not the reason. I just think the match outcomes, the thing with Hellion, now Apollo Dean, now he's Hellion, but there's no difference. If you're going to change him to Hellion, why not do a complete 360 on a character that's not already working instead of just painting his face different and calling him something different? They lose points there. Some of the outcomes of the matches, I think they lose points. So nothing to do with Artie. I would have loved to see that match, but in the end, just the booking of the matches itself, 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. Okay, I got it 6.5. Well, like you said, this wasn't anything shocking. This wasn't anything over the top great. I didn't think it was as... I don't think it's worthy of a 5. You had development from Baroni. Whether you liked it or not, we finally had some development on the Druid and Hellion and Cremator. Looks like the Supergirls division might be back. Looks like Taya Valkyrie...
Do you think she'll be a good addition? Will she strengthen that women's division and be a top competitor for the rest of the women in that?
Well, I think she's got a while to go before she really cements herself. Is it great to have another addition to the Supergirls division? Absolutely, because... It was looking a little thin. let's not lie here. It was looking a little thin. So even one girl is great. You had development with Sid Sylum in the natural selection, and then you had the main event. And I mean, I don't think it was a 5. I'll give it a 6.5.
So a couple low scores, a 5 and a 6.5. But you know, they were able to maybe make up for it, improve on their performance the very next night when they went out to Abbotsford for Return to Abbey. I guess Return to Abbey Part 2.
Yes, I think we could safely call it Return to Abbey Part 2. One thing we talked about earlier in this show, and we've talked about in previous shows, what runs in Surrey and Vancouver doesn't necessarily run in Abbotsford. It's almost like a parallel dimension where we throw storylines out the window, faces are heels, heels are faces, and a lot of the same this time around. But I will say this off the top. Smaller crowd for the event. Probably the smallest ECCW crowd I've ever seen. Me and you had that kind of concern when we first talked about Abbotsford. What's the crowd going to be like? We were pleasantly surprised when they were quite large in number and quite loud in their fanness, if that's a word. This time, not so many people. And another thing we often talk about, after the big shows, after the milestone ECCW events, there's a little bit of a hangover, isn't there?
There's a little bit of a hangover. It seems like these guys put a lot of energy into these events like the PAC Cups and the TLCs. And in ECCW, not a lot of turnaround, usually a week, 2 weeks before the next card. So maybe some of the guys a little fatigued. You know, some of the storylines maybe are just starting to build up. So I think that's why you see a little bit of a hangover at some of these events. And I think the city of Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, I think maybe having a little bit of a Stanley Cup sports hangover. I think that whole playoff run just kind of exhausted everybody, and they just kind of want to relax for a bit. So I think maybe hurting ECCW and the rest of the sporting world in the Lower Mainland.
We get into it regardless. We're here to do the recap anyways. Red Money,
We haven't seen him in a while. When was the last time we saw him? Whoa, easy. Where was the last time we saw him?
I cannot recall. It's been a while.
I think it was that mixed tag when he was with Tennille Taylor at the RCC and they fought Ray Brooks and Nicole Matthews. I think it was Respect Is Earned. I think it was there.
Yeah, or was Showcase possibly? I can't recall.
One of the two. Anyways, he was back in action taking on Nick Price, who just got back into action last event at the Pacific Cup.
You said Nick Price last event. You said maybe a little bit of ring rust, maybe not his best match. Did he wear off any of that ring rust this match? A better performance from Price?
Yeah, a better performance from Price. They gave these guys a little bit of time to work a match here, which was, I felt, was surprising for the opener. Not the dark match. I think they've abolished dark matches in ECCW. I think it's just matches now. So Red Money and Nick Price, they went at it first. They had a good chunk of time to have a good quick match. Sometimes a little lacking of flow, but in the end, a decent little opener. Red Money gets the victory with a backslide. And one thing I definitely had to put in the notes, a female referee. I've never seen that in wrestling before.
Well, it is 2011, Corey. You know, ECCW, I think, a pretty progressive, independent wrestling promotion. Why not have a female referee? And we've seen a few stinker referees in ECCW, so why not give the girls a try? And how did she do?
She did good. She did good.
And she had modified ring attire, I'm sure, short red shorts, cut off, maybe showing a little cleave. So when she goes down for that three count, just makes it that much more epic.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what she was wearing.
Yeah, oh, that's nice.
You're a perv, man. That's not what she was wearing. She had the generic referee shirt and the generic referee slacks. Get your head out of the gutter. She did an excellent job, and that's where it ends, Shano. So she stuck around, and she reffed, I think, the first half of the card, so she got some good practice in there, too, so kudos to her. The next match, building on what we saw at Circle of Fear, Hellion, Apollo Dean, Kalos, whatever you may, he fell to Junior, who we hadn't seen since the last Abyss for a show, if I'm not mistaken, when he tagged with Lumberjack Bubba and they lost to the Natural Selection. But Hellion comes out sporting some medical tape on his head from the thrashing he took from Cremator the night previous, and also accompanied by the Druids. So I think we can safely assume that he's been sacrificed or whatever. He's in that little faction. What do we call those guys anyways? Deeds, Cremator, and Hellion, and Druid.
I don't know. The dark dickheads. I don't something dark, something scary. You know, we can't go with, we have, they're previously known as the Church. Basically, it's all their former members of the Church. The Dark Knights.
The Dark Knights, I like it. No, Dark Knights, there you go. Dark Knight it is.
Star Wars, yeah. All right, we'll go with the Dark Knights for now.
We're bad.
So Hellion comes out with this Rigger, the Druid, the Von Hasher, Slasher.
Yeah, yeah.
Rigor Mortis, whatever you call him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it sounds like this is the guy that will, maybe he's the one doing the brainwashing, that he has some mysterious power. So I think maybe in the future, maybe we'll see this guy doing some in-ring, I don't know what you would call it, exorcisms or brainwashings.
Well, he's definitely the,
where they're going to go with this Druid character.
He's definitely the guy in charge, because he was, after Hellion lost the match to Junior, he was screaming at him, berating him all the way to the back. And this is all happening as Cremator is coming out and attacking Junior. So there's a little bit of an angle there. Something to build on, I say. We move along in the card. Now, I forgot to mention this off the top. I probably should have mentioned it right away. The Divine Prophet not able to make it out with his match for Sid Sylum. So as a result, a little bit of a shuffle. Cremator ends up fighting Sylum, and Hellion takes on Junior to fill in for the Prophet there. Sid.
And the Junior Hellion match, sorry, Corey, I don't know if we found out who won this match. We found out that Hellion was accompanied to the ring by the Druid, in the end being associated with the Dark Knights, let's call him for now. Did that help Hellion? Did he finally get a victory in ECCW?
No, he didn't. He was pump handle slammed to the mat, defeated by Junior. And maybe Hellion will see some more action in the mid-card, thanks to his alliance with these Dark Knights. Sounds funny when I say that. No, he got his ass kicked again. But at least some development there.
Did they throw him in the body bag again and take him out back?
No, I don't think that's like his method of transportation. I think that was a one-off.
But
I think that'd be a great angle for Hellion. He comes out in the body bag every time. They put him in the middle of the ring, unzip him, and he emerges from the body bag. I think that would add kind of an eerie, creepy angle to Hellion's character.
We got sidetracked there. So Creepmeyer, he comes out, he jumps Hellion. Or sorry, he comes out, he jumps Junior. And after that, Sid Sylum, he faces the Creepmeyer himself. Now, I think I was bigging up Sid and the Prophet as a pretty good match, and I thought it would have been a good match. But the Prophet didn't show up, so it's Sid and the Creepmeyer. And this one was kind of a slower match. Most of it was Sid getting worked over. In the end, Junior comes out, distracts the Druid. Creepmeyer gets distracted as a result. Sid hits Creepmeyer with what appeared to be a broom handle. I couldn't really make it out on the DVD. And gets the victory. And I can honestly say, development with the Creepmeyer and that those guys aside, not overly stoked on Sid's first couple matches back.
No, and he was working a program there with a natural selection. Like we said, in Abbotsford, though, it's kind of a alternate universe. So going in against the Creepmeyer, disappointed of the no-show about the Prophet. He's always got something funny to say. Last time we saw him in Abbotsford, he was huge with the crowd. He was well over. And I just wanted to hear the Prophet's angle on Sid Sylum, you know, the former double champion returning to ECCW. And maybe him cut a promo similar to Rick. You know, it's maybe trying to turn him into something else. Or I don't know where. Just anything out of the Prophet's mouth about Sid Sylum would have been entertaining. So disappointed that he wasn't there for this one.
Yeah, and the match suffered. While we did see development between Junior, he challenges Creepmeyer to a match next Abbotsford event after this one. We did see some development there, but as far as Sid was concerned, nothing. And like I said, not overly pumped about the first two matches back. But I'm willing to be a patient man. I've learned to be patient.
These are two guys, too, that fought on the card the previous night in Surrey. Sid Sylum, only a second match back, maybe a little ring rust, maybe still getting over his injuries. So you can kind of expect maybe a little bit of hangover from the previous night in Surrey.
Next match, Pete Powers and Stallion Smith. They took on Jordy Taylor and Ray Brooks, Team Dangerfield. Jordy is really starting to come into his own, and it really, I didn't notice it so much in the Surrey show, but this Abbotsford show, he looked confident. He was into his character. His execution was just, it was very improved. It was very good. His flow was great. Obviously, Pete Powers and Stallion Smith are getting the victory here. I don't think we expected Ray or Jordy to win this one against the selection. I thought it also helped to build Pete Powers in a heel. He was that much more of a bully against Jordy Taylor and Ray Brooks, so it pumped him up as more of a heel. And I think Jordy Taylor and Ray Brooks, are they that lovable team? Are they that lovable jobber team that we've been looking for, Shane?
Well, there was that team of Jamie Diaz and Chuck Austin sauce. They're not really a jobber team. They're more of a lovable team, but I think they're going to go for a more serious approach. So maybe Jordy Taylor and Ray Brooks are, you know, that underdog team. You know that movie Rudy, the little tiny guy who made the Notre Dame football team? Rudy.
Yeah.
They're Rudy, they're Dangerfield all wrapped into one. You know, the little engine that could, and one day they finally will. And I think maybe they'll keep struggling along here and then finally get a big victory and maybe a push. But, yes, I think they are the little team that could.
this one, which I will definitely get to in my tops section, I couldn't say enough about it. You know, Shane, I bitch about it all the time. I've been calling for the rematch of this for a long time. Tony Baroni and Bishop, they last met at TLC, and they worked a fantastic program in the months previous to TLC. Baroni, now the champ, he won it off Bishop and then unified it at Quest for Gold against Scotty Mack. He fought a dandy of a match against Bishop. Clean, straight up, good wrestling match. Like I said, well overdue. We saw Baroni win TLC, before that a DQ at the RCC, and before that Bishop winning at Season's Beatings. These two guys work a great match together, great chemistry, and refreshing. I thought it was great and easily for me the best match on the card. In the end, Tony Baroni escaping a Bishop bomb, wriggling down the back and rolling Bishop up for the 1-2-3 after Natch stuck his nose in the business. But once again, fantastic match from Tony Baroni. Bishop, even we call him the big match player, but even when he's on the littler cards in the parallel dimension, he manages to pull it out.
Nantoni Baroni, we've seen him in a lot of tag matches, mixed tag matches, teaming up with Jason Sullivan on occasion. And it's good to see him back one-on-one in the ring. And this is a big match, taking on the former champion. And I think having a victory over Bishop just further establishes, you know, that yes, he's champion, he deserves to be champion, and he might be here for a while. So I just like that it's establishing Tony Baroni as a force.
The crowd was well behind the match, so obviously they're on the same page as us, and rightfully so. A dandy of a match, and my pick for match of the evening. But a close follower, and this one I probably should have touted as a little bit of a better match than I anticipated. The Bollywood Lions, we talk about them every show. We love these guys. They're propping up that tag division, and they need a good feud. And I think this was a step direction to see what they could really do against a true face tag team. And we're talking about Jamie Diaz and the returning Chuck Awesome Sauce, who we haven't seen probably since the last Abbotsford show, if I'm not mistaken. He's been gone for a little while. I thought this was a fantastically wrestled tag match. Great heat for the Lions. Great pop for Diaz and Sauce for the return. And something I really liked, Chuck Awesome Sauce is not that over-the-top cartoon character. He came out, he did his entrance, definitely he did it, but that's where it stopped. When he got in the ring, he was all business. It's not like he was whooping ass and taking names, because that would have been out of character. But for his character, he wrestled smart, if that makes sense. He would tag in, do a couple quick moves, and tag Diaz in for Diaz to handle the bulk of the match. And I thought that was smart. I mean, it doesn't make you look like a comical jawboat, and at the same time, you can still be that lovable face couple, which Diaz and Awesome Sauce were.
Yeah, and a guy can only go in there and be, you know, Mr. Joker, Mr. Jim Carrey for so many matches before it starts to grow old and you say, all right, you know, we know you're funny, but let's see if you can actually wrestle. And I think it's come to that point for Chuck Awesome Sauce where, you know, he's like, yeah, I can be funny, but also I can take care of myself in the ring. The team of Jamie Diaz, Chuck Awesome Sauce, I think this is probably going to be a one-off. I think, like I said earlier in the show, Jamie Diaz is probably moving on to bigger, better things. I think he's going to have a coming out party in Poco. I think with the alternate universe thing here in Abbotsford again coming up, that people wanted to see this team. They saw him last time in Abbotsford. They loved him. So I think this is ECCW just kind of giving them what they want. But I don't see this team sticking together, and I don't see a feud with the Bollywood Lions. I still want to see Lush and Suede take on the Lions for the belts.
Wow, Shane knows what he wants. In the end, Diaz and Sauce, they do lose. Harf, cranking back on the Boston Crab on Chuck Awesome Sauce as Jamie Diaz is isolated outside, gets the victory. And one thing I did want to touch on is we talk about the influences of certain wrestlers just based on tights or mannerisms or move repertoires. The Bollywood Lions changing their tights. Usually we see them with the black and white and the tassels, but they've added some pink trim. And weren't you and I, Shane, talking about the last couple shows' influence from the Hart Foundation on the Bollywood Lions? They love their sharpshooters. They've used the heart attack on numerous occasions, and now they've got similar ring attire.
No, yes. I do remember us mentioning that, the old Hart Foundation, Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart's team. And I guess we'll have to get these guys on Turnbuckle Time and ask them, are these guys big influence on you guys growing up? And I think anybody, any wrestling fan growing up in Canada, you know, Bret Hart was the guy. He was the guy you looked up to. I remember when Austin 316 came in and you had the Hart Foundation. I was just so loyal to Bret Hart, wouldn't buy the Austin t-shirt, wouldn't cheer, and really didn't get onto the Austin bandwagon until Bret Hart left. So I think you've got to be influence on this team, and I think he's an influence on pretty much any wrestling fan growing up in Canada.
Well, I just found it interesting because we were talking about it on the show, and then I come and I see their new gear, which was no doubt very Hart Foundation-esque, and I thought, wow, there you go. Maybe me and Shane were actually right for once. Let's move on to the main event now. This one got built from the last main event in Abbotsford. Danny Deeds, I think it ended in a counter or a DQ, if I'm not mistaken, with Scotty Mac, who at the time was the champ. We obviously knew Deeds isn't going over, even if it is in Abbotsford, because they're not going to put the strap on him. But this time, no strap, and it's no DQ. So anything can happen in Abbotsford, Shane. And I found it slightly disappointing. A lot of the match was fought outside the ring in the Cadet Hall. But most of the match was Scotty Mac kicking the crap out of Deeds. I don't think Deeds had any offensive input whatsoever. In probably this thing goes on for about 10 minutes. Scotty Mac kicking the crap out of Deeds in the audience. I think Deeds maybe lands like one suplex to kind of break the momentum. Scotty gets back on the trolley. Eventually, Danny Deeds, with the help of the Bollywood Lions who came in, they brought in some barbed wire boards like they were using from Circle of Fear. And Scotty Mac puts Danny Dietz through one of these things, gets the pin. It's over. Abbotsford, they're ready to riot. They're ready to start flipping tractors. It's getting ugly in there. I'm just kidding. It's quiet. Jamie Diaz and Chuck Awesomesoft come out for the save, and they announce the six-man tag for the next match. You can probably tell, by the way, I went through this so quickly, I don't really have much to say on this match. It was pretty one-sided, and I don't know. I kind of got lost in the shuffle while I was watching.
I thought last time Deeds and Mac put on a great match, and going in, we thought, you know, there's no way Deeds is going to win. Scotty Mac's the champ. They're not going to put the belt on Deeds, especially at an Abbotsford show. But there was parts in that match where I was really thinking, hey, Deeds could win this one. This is looking pretty good for him. You know, I could suspend my disbelief in that match. And I thought they would come, you know, use that momentum. I had such a great match last time and continue with, can Deeds actually upset Scotty Mac? But it seems like they went the opposite direction and just stopped Deeds in his tracks. Interesting to see, but it looks like they're going to continue on with this storyline, teaming up Danny Deeds with the most popular team in Abbotsford, Diaz and Sauce, for a six-man tag. So maybe they're waiting, kind of building Deeds' revenge for this six-man tag, maybe make it a little bit more believable that he could get the best of Mac in a tag match. We'll have to see, but I really hope that Diaz, Deeds, and Sauce get that victory over Mac and get the revenge and just kind of give the fans what they want out in Abbotsford.
Yeah, it will be interesting. They're definitely obviously building that for the next Abbotsford show, because if this was the last Abbotsford show and that's how they ended it with Danny Deeds getting the crap kicked out of him and just getting buried, I'd be like, eesh, that's sour grapes right there. But
yeah, well, obviously they're going to put the top faces in Abbotsford together, the team of Diaz and Sauce, huge out there. The fans love Deeds. So I think you get those three fan favorites together, you get maybe an upset victory over Scotty Mac's team, and maybe you end the Abbotsford shows for a little while on a high note with them getting the victory.
Well thought out, Shane. Well thought out. Let's get into our tops and flops before we get into previewing the Poco event. What were your tops for Abbotsford?
All right, for my top, I'm going to say the return of Chuck Awesome Sauce and Jamie Diaz. They were over huge last time in Abbotsford. Good to see Awesome Sauce back in the ring, and good to see his character, you know, maturing a little bit, evolving a little bit, and we'll just interesting to see where it goes. I don't think they're going to keep this team together outside of Abbotsford. I think Diaz is going on a solo route, but it's nice to see Awesome Sauce back in the ring.
My top, I'm pretty sure you could pick it out just by listening to me recap the event, was Barone and Bishop. They had a fantastic program together before. That one took a back seat when Bishop took a nasty arm injury during TLC, whether that was intended to continue that program or not. Just a fantastically wrestled match, a bare-bones match. They didn't need any weapons or anything like that. It was fantastic. I think Barone can handle himself against the big boys in a one-on-one match for the strap. Him and Bishop are obviously great partners when they wrestle together. There's just something about those two that I really enjoy in the ring. And for my money, easily the best match on the card. Your flop.
I'm still deciding on a flop, so I'm going to throw it right back to you and listen to what you had to say.
I'm going to go with the main event. I think they could have done a lot more in not making Deeds look like a punching bag. I get that you're building up to the next event, but Deeds had no offense there. He got the crap kicked out of him. He didn't come close to landing a finisher and then get screwed at the last second or something like that. He got beat up and then powerbombed through the barbed wire and made to look humiliated in front of Abbotsford, and I guess that is just building good for the next event, but it better be a very good next event if that's what they're doing for that. Otherwise, they just... The Abbey fans came out to watch the homeboy just get the shit kicked out of him.
I'm going to give you my flop before I rate it. I'm going to say Hellion coming out and really another loss. They're changing his character, yet he's not winning. He's not any stronger. He really doesn't seem any different than Apollo Dean. And I just kind of wish that they would do something. If you're going to change him 360, do a complete 360 on his character. So I'm going to say my flop is Hellion coming in and doing nothing again. And then if you want my score, sure, you want my score. I'm going to say this one, I don't know, it seemed more of a fun card than the one in Surrey. I like some of the matches a little bit better. I like some of the outcomes. So I'm going to give it a little higher score than Surrey. I'm going to give it 6.5.
You're sure on that one?
I'm sure. I'm not going back. 6.5.
Okay, I got 6.5 too, so we're pretty much on the same page, even though you're pretty critical with that 5 in the last show.
So they're returning to Abbotsford, I'm guessing before the summer. Do you know the date on that one?
I believe it's in September, October, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to check on that. I don't want to go ahead and just throw dates out there. Let's get into the preview for Poco. Like I said off the top of the show, they haven't been back in Poco. The last show was on July 14th, 2007. And they had Wrestling for Hunger there in 2009, but the last actual show was in 2007. The main event, like you said, could be a coming out party for him. Jamie Diaz taking on Scotty Mack. To my recollection, these guys have never met one-on-one before, or even in a tag match, I don't think, since we've been here. Of course, last match wrapped up with Scotty attacking Deeds and Diaz coming to bail out Deeds. So a little bit of background there. Do you think Poco is going to be another one of these parallel dimensions again, Shane, and that it's going to separate the storylines between that and Vancouver and Surrey?
I don't know. It depends where ECCW plans on going with the Poco shows. Maybe they could be doing shows every few weeks out in Port Coquitlam. But if it's a one-off, I'm going to say it's going to be more of the alternate universe where the storylines don't really carry over from the Vancouver shows, from the Surrey shows. But I guess we'll have to see the result of this one, and we'll get a better idea if it will be that alternate universe.
And I think this will be an excellent tester for Jamie Diaz to see if he is maybe ready to make that next big step, because Scotty Mack, he's no slouch in the ring. He'll make you look good, but at the same time, you got to help yourself, and I think it'll be a good tester for Diaz, and I just think a good match altogether. Let's hope the Poco crowd brings out the Diaz signs and the whatnot. Here's going to be another good match, too. We're talking about Tony Baroni establishing himself in those one-on-one championship matches. If his opponent shows up, he's fighting the Divine Prophet. Once again, to my recollection, I can't remember these guys fighting each other. Prophet no-showed the last event. Baroni beat Bishop at the last event. What do you think is going to happen here?
I really think that Tony Baroni, they're going to establish him, obviously. He's the big man in charge. He's got this thing with Pete Powers. They're not going to discredit Tony Baroni by having him lose to the Divine Prophet while they're trying to build this heat with Pete Powers. Baroni will win this match. I think this is a great match for the Port Coquitlam crowd, though, to get introduced to the champ in this one and to get introduced to one of the most colorful characters in ECCW, the Divine Prophet. So I think this is a great match for them just to showcase what ECCW has to offer. Great wrestling, great entertainment, great characters. You got it all in this one.
There you go. Artemis Spencer, he's back, and he's taking on Danny Deeds for the NWA Junior Canadian Heavyweight Championship. Artie no-showed the triple threat at the Circle of Fear. I'm sure we've touched on that once or twice. And Deeds lost in embarrassing fashion at Return to Abbotsford. Former partners in the church, they're locking up for the first time in a long time, if at all. Where do you see this one going? Obviously, we don't see Artie losing the strap, eh?
I don't see him losing the strap, but I see Danny Deeds and the so-called or the Dark Knights or whatever we want to call them. I just see them playing the heavy heels in this one, interfering everywhere they can. Artemis coming off as the squeaky clean baby face. You know, he's trying, he's digging in deep, and he won't let anybody stop him. So I see a big baby face against, you know, a heel match here, and just maybe a little exaggerated, a little bit over the top for the Port Coquitlam crowd.
I think it'll be one to look forward to. Obviously, we never have any gripes about Artemis Spencer's in-ring ability. We'll have to see if Danny Deeds and his cronies have anything to say about it, but I think it should be a dandy match. Nicole Matthews defending her ECCW Supergirl strap against Veronica Vice and Casey Spinelli in a triple threat match. Spinelli defeated Vice and Taya Valkyrie at Circle of Fear. Nicole Matthews jumped in afterwards. I think we can safely assume Nicole and Ray Ray are split up now, but will that be a factor? We'll see.
I think there's going to be a little interference. I think this one could get dirty. I think we could see that snotty, you know, hard-hitting, balls-to-the-wall Nicole Matthews back now that she's ditched Ray Brooks. I think we could see her maybe getting cheating, chair shot, you know, foreign object. I think it's going to be a DQ with either Vice or Casey Spinelli getting the victory.
There you go. That's not a bad prediction, Shane. Maybe we will, because we have... Maybe we haven't noticed, maybe subliminally, but Nicole Matthews hasn't been that hard-edged Nicole Matthews we're used to ever since she started partnering with Ray Ray. Maybe he's got her a bit soft, a little bit of that Southern comfort.
And she almost had to play kind of a babysitter, almost like look out for this guy, make sure he doesn't get hurt or do something stupid, that she's looking over her shoulder looking out for Ray Brooks. Now she can just concentrate on herself.
The next match, non-title,
But we're getting to see all the contenders at POCO, which is good. They're bringing out the big guns, and they've got some good matches. I like the card so far. The Bollywood Lions, non-title, taking on Jordy Taylor and Ray Brooks. Now, do you think if Jordy Taylor and Ray Brooks, dare I say it, get a victory here, do you think they're contenders in the tag division, or do you think this is just another thing where the Bollywood Lions are going to crush them?
No, I don't think the Bollywood Lions are going to crush them. I think they're going to be heavy heels. I think this is, again, just a showcase match for the crowd in Port Coquitlam, showing off the Bollywood Lions. These are our top guys. These are the baddest guys in the ECCW. You want to hate these guys, and you want to cheer for the Rudy team, the underdog. So I think they're just kind of establishing the characters and the storylines with this match. And the Lions will walk away with the victory, but, again, just to kind of outlining what ECCW is all about in Port Coquitlam.
The Lions defended their straps against Diaz and Awesome Sauce in Abbotsford, and Taylor and Brooks lost back-to-back events at Surrey and Abbotsford to the administration and then the selection. So we'll see how that one goes over. I think it's going to be perhaps a mini coming-out party, because something about whenever I see non-title and it says non-title there, something a light goes off in my head. So I think this may be their opportunity. We'll see what happens.
If they do get a victory, I think it's going to be the Bollywood Lion just saying, screw you, Port Coquitlam, screw the crowd, screw these bums. And they'll walk to the ring, maybe a 10 count or maybe a disqualification. If the Lions lose, they're not doing a clean 1-2-3.
Next up, he makes his first appearance since stealing, some would say, the Pat Cup in 2011. Rick, he's back against Pat Cup semifinalist Brilliant Billy Suede. Both men have been out since the Pat Cup. Rick was victorious over Artemis Spencer. And Brilliant Billy Suede, he beat Nicole Matthews in the first round and then lost to El Fantasmo in the semifinals. Do you think this is another builder for Rick here? Or do you think something's going to happen with Billy Suede after we saw that quasi-heel turn at the Pacific Cup?
I don't know. There's been no mention of El Fantasmo on this card. Really no mention of him since the Pat Cup when Rick screwed him over. So I see he's not on the card, but I think maybe he'll be out in Port Coquitlam and maybe have something to say to Rick, maybe a interference in this one. So I'm gonna say we're going to see El Fantasmo or somebody in the Pat Cup that was burned by Rick get involved in this one.
It will be interesting, but I'm happy to see Rick. I'm happy that they're going to keep on going with Rick here. I mean, he has won the Pat Cup now, so he did it in a controversial fashion, and like we said, it has opened doors, so. And it's good to see. I think Billy Suede is a good guy if they keep him in typical Billy Suede fashion and take the microphone out of his hand. If they keep him as Billy Suede and keep Rick as Rick, I think that'll be a really, really, really good tilt for both characters, for Rick's storyline. And I don't have a problem with the booking of that one. And finally, a rematch of the opener from Abbotsford, the last show, Nick Price versus Red Money. Not a whole lot of history here. We'll go back to Abbotsford where Red Money defeated Nick Price with a backslide. I called it a dandy little opener. Maybe ECCW thought the same, because these guys are going to probably open up the card once again in Port Coquitlam. Okay, that was it. We did the two recaps. We previewed Port Coquitlam. We heard some audio from the Natural Selection, as well as Ravenous Randy and Moondog Manson. Let's get into some news and notes. You've been keeping posted on the Twitterverse chain?
I've been seeing a few things of the WWE on the Twitterverse, but is something going on with ECCW that I should know?
Well, it always seems to pop up in our discussions, but this Wrestling Life, getting international acclaim now, famous wrestler and Art of Wrestling podcaster Colt Cabana actually giving this Wrestling Life a shout-out today on Twitter, saying that he supports indie wrestling and he went out and bought this Wrestling Life. I think that's pretty cool, just knowing that This little promotion we got going on here in Canada is it's on the map.
Yeah, and I don't know how much exposure the film got in the United States. I know it did have a run on Super Channel, and they had a showing of it at the Rio Theater in Vancouver, but I think it was just been a couple of weeks ago it was released on iTunes in the United States. So, you know, maybe ECCW might even pick up a few fans south of the border. We know there's a big wrestling community in Washington. Maybe we'll see some new fans coming over from the border to check out ECCW because of this Wrestling Life. Been a really great promotional tool, I think, for ECW or ECCW.
I completely agree. And he was also, Stephen Gillis, I'm talking about, the director of this Wrestling Life, was actually on the score, if I'm not mistaken, this week on, I think it's the Fight Show, talking about this Wrestling Life. So again, while that is still in Canada, at least some acclaim from across the country, because ECCW, while it is independent, it is quite a big organization. I mean,
if you think about it, if you go and do some research on some of these other Canadian indie leagues, ECCW has been around for quite a long time now, and I just think these are, like you say, great promotional tools to get it out there and show, like, these are what the wrestlers are about. And I think also the World of Hurt with Lance Storm and Tennille Taylor and Casey Spinelli helped that too. So I think it's onwards and upwards for ECCW.
And you can tell ECCW is picking up momentum. We have shows in Port Coquitlam. We have more shows in Abbotsford, Vancouver, Surrey. So they're going all over the map, all over the Lower Mainland. And they got to come up to Kelowna. I got to see ECCW again.
Do you have any news and or notes, Shane?
I have very little news and notes. You can always follow me on Twitter at the Sharkcast. And if you're one of those Xbox Live guys, add me on Xbox Live. I'll kick your ass at SmackDown versus Raw or NHL, whatever you want. Lockwood 86.
There you go. He's as much of an angry podcaster. He's just as much a lovable nerd as Shane Lockwood. You can
now I feel bad for dissing that nerd that got kicked in the face by Baroni.
He's one of you.
I'm sure he's got Xbox Live. You know, add me. You know, we'll play a little NHL and no hard feelings.
There you go. You can follow me at CD Basso. You can also follow us at Turnbuckle Time. Our website, turnbuckletime.podomatic.com. You can check out ECCW News on ECCW.com, their Facebook fan page, and also their Twitter at ECCW. Most of the wrestlers, they also have Twitter accounts. If you're creepy enough, you can go snoop them out. I'm not going to hand them out. I'm not going to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. So you go snoop them out, follow them, get all the latest. I like Twitter. It's for me, the place to go when you want fast happening news, when I want to find out what CM Punk has done next. I go on Twitter. When I want to find out what Moondog Manson has had for dinner, I go on Twitter. When I want to find out how many 50-50 tickets Ray Brooks bought, I go on Twitter.
Twitter is the place to be. And you mentioned CM Punk. You are heading to Money in the Bank.
I am.
When are you heading down to Chicago for the event? It's coming up in a couple weeks here?
Yes. I am leaving the 14th, which is a Thursday, and I'm coming back the 18th, which is the Monday after the show. I will be missing July 16th, I believe, is at the RCC. I will be missing that show.
But you will be seeing possibly CM Punk's last match,
mm-hmm,
at WWE. So I think you get a free pass. We'll allow you to miss that ECCW event, mm-hmm, see what might be a little bit of pro wrestling history. You spoke about the Twitter universe too. Sorry to cut you off there, Corey.
Mm-hmm.
But it blew up. Everybody was talking about CM Punk's promo he did last week on Monday Night Raw. I know you being a big CM Punk fan, what did you think of it?
Well, my opinion was, like, I watched it with my girlfriend, and we sat there and watched it live, and we were like, this is, we both had the Home Alone mouth gaping, hands to the cheeks, kind of looking at each other like, are we really hearing this? I think just the fact that even if a promo like that is like 5% believable, the wrestler's done a good job. And a lot of people were talking and the whole suspension thing, and it's interesting because those are definitely, like, it looked like Punk was very sincere in what he was saying, but at the same time, one has to think it's a work, yeah?
You have to think that, but at the same time, he's talking about returning to Ring of Honor, and he's calling The Rock Dwayne, just these little things that he throws in there to make you think, I don't know if WWE would approve him saying these type of things.
Yeah.
You know, promoting another promotion where he could end up. So, very interesting. Maybe they have signed him to a new contract, and they're just all keeping it on the down low. But whatever it may be, it's a great storyline. And like I said, I haven't ordered a WWE pay-per-view since WrestleMania 19, and I think Money in the Bank could be my first one.
Well, I'm hoping whatever they're doing with Punk and that storyline culminates at Money in the Bank in his hometown of Chicago, Illinois. What are we playing out to here, Shane? You're my DJ whenever we sign off the show, and I like to let you choose the tune. So
I've had you put me on the spot the last couple of weeks where I had to pick. I was gonna say that Rob Zombie for the Cremator. I don't know if we ever played out to that yet.
I'm on board with that.
Hellion theme goes with that faction.
I'm on board with that. Let's go out to some House of a Thousand Corpses by Rob Zombie, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, Shane, thanks for joining me once again, buddy. Hopefully, I'd love to see you down here in the Lower Mainland sometime this summer to take in a show with me. It's been a while, probably since Showcase, if I'm not mistaken. So thanks for joining me regardless, and we'll touch base probably the next couple weeks to talk about the recap of Poco.
Yeah, we'll have fun in Chicago, and we'll be looking for your sign.
Thanks, Shane. Take care. It's Corey Basso. It's Shane Lockhart. It's Turnbuckle Time.